As the U.S. works to broker a peace deal to end the war in Ukraine, the U.K. says it will step up Europe's defense spending.
I can announce this government will begin the biggest sustained increase in defense spending since the end of the Cold War.
And the funds will be paid for with cuts to international aid.
Children all across the world will be affected by this decision. It's something which we are stunned by, and it's something which we think is a very harmful decision.
So what comes after the war when it comes to rebuilding and locating deported Ukrainian children?
They must be returned and not used as basically a poker chip.
Today is Tuesday, February 25th, and this is The Issue from VOA. Hi, everyone. I'm Lori London.
I've spoken to President Putin, and my people are dealing with him constantly, and his people in particular. And they want to do something. I mean, that's what I do. I do deals. My whole life is deals. That's all I know is deals.
President Donald Trump Monday, while hosting French President Emmanuel Macron, as he looks to quickly end the war in Ukraine. And as European countries scramble to bolster their collective defense, British Prime Minister Keir Starmer Tuesday pledged to raise UK defense spending.
2.5% of GDP on defense. But we will bring it forward so that we reach that level in 2027.
Starmer's announcement coming just days before he's due to meet with President Trump at the White House Thursday to try to persuade Trump to maintain American support for Ukraine.
As the nature of that conflict changes, as it has in recent weeks, it brings our response into sharper focus. A new era that we must meet, as we have so often in the past, together and with strength.
But charity groups are not happy that the defense spending in the UK will be paid for with 40% in cuts to international aid. Dan Paskins, Executive Director of Policy, Advocacy and Campaigns at Save the Children UK. At Save the Children UK, speaking to Reuters.
This is money that goes to help when there's a humanitarian crisis. So it's money that's going to help, for example, sort of children and people affected in Ukraine, in Sudan, in Gaza, in sort of some of the places where there are conflicts at the moment. And it's also something which money gets spent on programs which help to sort of build strong communities and help people to get out of poverty, but also which are proven to help prevent future crises. So it's sort of particularly short-sighted to sort of take that money away.
And speaking of children, when the war finally ends, what happens to the hundreds of Ukrainian children that were deported and adopted in Russia? Concerns raised months ago by Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky.
Forcing children from one nation into another and erasing their identities is clearly a genocidal practice. Russia has been doing this since the very beginning of the invasion. The International Criminal Court has already issued a warrant for Putin's arrest based on these actions.
A program run by Yale University's Humanitarian Research Lab has been working to find out the identities and whereabouts of the children. Joining us now to talk about their latest report is Research Lab Director Nathaniel Raymond. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with us.
Your latest study talks a little bit about this. We've been hearing a lot about trying efforts to end this war as it entered its fourth year. We haven't heard much about the latest involving the children. Can you talk a little bit about what your latest report found and what any update you have?
In December of last year, the Yale School of Public Health's Humanitarian Research Lab released a new report that shows the government of Vladimir Putin has been forcibly and coercively adopting and fostering Ukrainian children through three interconnected Russian databases as if they were orphans born in Russia. The importance of these findings are threefold. First, we've identified by name 314 children from eastern Ukraine that have been brought in some cases by Vladimir Putin's own personal plane, into Russia and later placed with families in Russia, including for adoption. The second major finding is that the Putin administration personally worked with the Duma to remove legal barriers to the renunciation of these children's Ukrainian citizenship and to naturalize them as Russians in order to comply with Russian domestic child welfare law, which requires all adoptees to be Russian citizens. The third and maybe most disturbing finding is that Russia sought to conceal the fact that they were forcibly and coercively adopting and fostering children. And why is that? Well, though Putin and Lvova-Belova have already been indicted by the International Criminal Court for the war crime of forced deportation, forcibly transferring children from one national or ethnic group to another is a higher degree of crime underneath the Rome Statute, which may constitute a crime against humanity.
These children, do you have any idea? Are they all different ages or specific ages? And did they have families or were they already orphans in Ukraine?
These are important questions. In terms of age range, what we know is that the children as of 2022 ranged in ages from as young as 2 years to 17 years of age. What we also know is that about 50% of the children in the group that we identified, which we think these children from Donetsk and Luhansk, are not the only regions in the database. We also have reason to believe there may be children from Kharkiv, Zaporizhia, and Kherson as well. These children, 50% of them were siblings. And we've been able to determine that through Russia's own records. The additional thing we know about these children is that they were primarily wards of the state at the time that they were moved to Russia. That does not mean, in the American sense of the word orphan, that all of them were orphans. Some, many, we don't know the full amount, have living parents and other family members. But at the time that they were transferred, in some cases days before the full-scale invasion, they were in state-run institutions in Donetsk and Luhansk.
And you said they were, a lot of them were siblings. Is there any information as to whether or not the siblings were kept together or separated?
We've looked at this question very closely, and so far we've determined that in at least one case, one of four siblings was separated from the other three in fostering and adoption. We have reason to believe that probably was not the only case, but we've been able to confirm it in one case. But that in itself is extremely concerning. If you read the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child, even if the process of fostering adoption in this case was legal, which it isn't, but even if it was, the Convention on the Rights of the Child basically creates a very strong guideline that siblings should not be separated in temporary or permanent rehoming.
And given the information that you've been able to uncover as far as many of the names, is there any indication that some of these children would be located and brought back? Given the talks to end this war, what happens then?
The first thing to know is that we have transferred this information to the government of Ukraine and to Ukrainian law enforcement and Ukrainian agencies working to identify and return the children through negotiations. So that happened even before the release of the report. It's also been transferred in terms of the underlying data about the children to the International Criminal Court last year. The second thing to know here, and this is really the key takeaway, is that right now, Ukraine needs to know everything it can about where its children are inside Russia, what has happened to them, and their specific names and points of origin. The danger here is that any negotiation for an end of the war in Ukraine that does not have the return of these children in a full accounting of who and where these children are is a threat to children for generations to come in the future of war. Children underneath the Geneva Conventions have a special protected status, which means that they cannot be treated like they are POWs, spies, or other types of prisoner exchange. They must be returned and not used as basically a poker chip in a geopolitical card game. If that happens and the children are not immediately returned separate from these negotiations, but they become leverage used by Russia against Ukraine, then that has significant implications for the future of armed conflict where children can become hostages and pawns.
So has there been any discussion about this with all this talk about ending the war?
I have seen neither publicly nor in any of the private discussions that I've been in various capitals related to the children's issue, any concerted effort on the part of the United States in the discussion of these negotiations, proposed negotiations, to resolve the issue of the children, either as part of the negotiations or before the negotiations begin. And it is essential that the United States government uses its leverage to make the return of these children a prerequisite for any future negotiations. Children cannot be treated as if they are POWs.
Has the Ukrainian government brought this up at all? And are they working on this in some way?
President Zelensky, the European allies, Canada, the United Kingdom, and other members of the Bring Back Kids UA coalition, of which I and the Yale Humanitarian Research Lab are part of, have been very clear that the children need to be accounted for. They need to be transferred immediately to a third party country and brought home, consistent with the laws of armed conflict. The European partners, Canada, South Africa, Qatar, have all been extremely clear on this point.
And you said you were able to come up with many of their names. Do you also know where they are, or is that just impossible because they've all been adopted?
We do know where the children are in many cases, yes. We have information that's specific that we've not released publicly, including some of the names of their current foster or adopted families. And we've not released that for the protection of the children and the protection of the families. Now, we don't have that information in all cases. We know that the 314 we identify in the report is probably a fraction of the larger number.
Are there families in Ukraine that are actually looking for their children?
Yes, there are families in Ukraine looking for their children. There are countless stories, and I've met many of the grandmothers in specific cases that have gone into Russia to find their children and in some cases brought them back. In those cases, it's mostly children that have been placed in re-education camps as temporary, quote, summer camps that turned into broader re-education camps that in some cases include military training. It's important to note that all the children in this program of coerced fostering and adoption have gone through some form of, quote, patriotic re-education in Russia.
And do you think that the families that have adopted some of the children know where they came from?
We don't know in all cases, but in most cases, we believe they do know that they are originally Ukrainian. Yes.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time to update on this.
Always. Thank you.
That was Yale Humanitarian Research Lab Executive Director Nathaniel Raymond. You've been listening to The Issue from The Voice of America. That does it for today's program, but we thank you so much for joining us. For more news 24 hours a day, check out our website at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Lori London. We'll talk to you tomorrow.